Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Ewan, it's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's the same Call of Duty, but I can't make that rhyme, it's just bad. How you feeling? How you doing?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of... I want to say that I'm shocked because I feel like Call of Duty campaigns are literally the most... like, you know what you're going to get before you go into them. And yet somehow they have my... I would call this an all-timer bag-fumbling moment, but mm-hmm. given that the game's only going to make $1 billion anyway, it can't be that. But it's still kind of... we already had those concerns going in that it was going to basically be, you know, it was originally Modern Warfare 2 premium DLC mm-hmm. that was remangled into a full game, and it seems as if those concerns have kind of, yeah, they've manifested, and they're not good.
I tell you what I forgot happened, because yeah, we'll read out a few different things that are happening in regards to Modern Warfare 3's launch date, but I forgot that last year Jason Schreier reported that they were going to be pushing back this year's Call of Duty, assumedly for additional development time, assumedly for essential things that would have brought that together, but in reality it has just released anyway. Obviously the review scores that are doing the rounds is a 4 out of 10 from IGN, but one of the main parts of this is, like you said, it feels like this weird DLC turned main release thing, which was kind of advertised as the first open world Call of Duty, but in reality that just results in lots of really open, barren environments filled with little pockets of AI that you can run up to and interact with, or fight or whatever. It doesn't feel like a polished product. There's obviously bits and pieces here, like the cutscenes at the very, very beginning are quite impressive. The general idea, the general level of motion capture that's there is cool. There's an attempt to do a new version of No Russian. It's nowhere near it's not set in an airport anymore, it's set on a plane, but they try and invoke that same title as it was teased at the end of Modern Warfare 2. There's things like that, but one of the major things that did the rounds over the weekend was that some people playing the earliest version of the game got an error message on screen asking for the Modern Warfare 2 disc, which it very much spells out that this thing was always meant to be attached to Modern Warfare 2. So that was one thing. Activision tweeted out saying they fixed it, just saying they fixed the error without acknowledging what the specifics of the error were. And that was one thing. Another thing is that the game's size is 234 gig. It was mentioned officially that it was going to be over 200 gig, but it is just another one of those unoptimized releases. It's one of those things where Call of Duty over the years, especially over the last few years, has exploded in file size, and this is the biggest one so far. So there's a little bit more to it, just in terms of the reality of what you're buying, but I guess does any of this surprise you?
I mean, I've had this conspiracy for yonks now that this is a deliberate move of Call of Duty of squeezing out the other games on your hard drives, so that you have to develop more time or devote more time to Call of Duty. I know that you can go into the manager and like remove the things that you don't want to play, but that initial base download, it's just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like the campaign, the way it's arranged, those open world levels, which are called open combat missions, I think they're called, that in itself is just ridiculous because they're repurposed multiplayer maps, like different bits mm-hmm. of Verdansk. And Call of Duty now feels very much like it's a hodgepodge of nostalgia, trying to like do that, but then also pushing people towards the newer iterations of like Warzone or whatever. I know in the open combat missions, there are weapon drops you can pick up and you drop in literally like you're in Warzone. It's just kind of, it's emblematic of where the franchise is kind of heading in weird directions. I know mm-hmm. that overall, I feel like people have received Modern Warfare 3's multiplayer quite positively. Modern Warfare 2's, it was kind of a bit more slower paced than the previous titles, and this one's kind of really gone back to that. If you're into that kind of slidey, shooty, stupid stuff, then you'll probably be a big fan. I'm not. I like to basically, like, be cautious and whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, it's just, it's very weird as well, because I know that people have enjoyed largely the new iteration of Modern Warfare's story. Mm-hmm. So to end it and not give it the proper conclusion that it really necessarily deserves is also a bit weird, and then to have it all mired in that, oh, we're just going to do bits of the old games again. I don't know. Call of Duty is in a very weird place at the moment.
Yeah. I think it's weird as well, because obviously the Activision acquisition finally went through, and it's one of those things where, like I said, you can look back to the news reports that were doing the rounds across last year about them missing, potentially missing Call of Duty altogether this year and missing the annual cycle, and then something happened behind the scenes, whatever, where it's like, let's just get one more out there. We might as well get a bunch more unit sales. We might as well do one more thing, and then we're going to shunt it off down to Microsoft anyway. So I kind of wonder just how brazen the reality of that was, where it's like, what can we cobble together? Okay, we'll call it Open Combat Zones, we've got some environments, we've got, you know, these, obviously the game engine, we've got these AI scripts and everything else. I would be fascinated by the reality of what this development was, because it does feel and look very thrown together. Which is the other thing, is that you know, it is a full price game. It's £70 over in the UK, if not more if you get different versions of it. But the campaign's only about 3 hours long. It's apparently, if you really push it, you can do about 5 hours, but at the same time, it's not very long. And that does mostly line up with the shorter runtime of the previous two recent Modern Warfare campaigns. But still, it's an extremely short runtime for a full price product, and to me at least speaks to the idea of them just, what can we put together to get it over the finish line?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if that doesn't, you know, that's a big argument in of itself to bring back Blockbuster so you could just rent the newest Call of Duty and Steam through the campaign in a weekend. We need to bring back game rentals to combat this kind of nefariousness. And also the Xbox, if you were signing on an Xbox over the last few days, you got a big home notification ping saying, yep, hey, Call of Duty's out. You want to come on over to Call of Duty? We spent a lot of money on this thing, so we kind of
need this to work.
And it's a terrible first foot forward for the new era. Obviously, it's not under the new era yet, but in terms of, you know, post-acquisition, this is what Call of Duty is. This is probably one of the most cynical examples of entries that we've had in the series thus far. Mm-hmm. You know, forget about all the trend chasing stuff that occurred, you know, after Modern Warfare games, where they kind of went into like the futuristic stuff because near future warfare was the thing. Forget about like the nostalgia throwbacks to World War II and the initial Modern Warfare. Mm-hmm. This is the most cynically business minded thing that they have done yet. And especially, you know, it kind of reminds me a little bit of FIFA, how, right, you know, a lot of people want to play a FIFA game to like play career mode or do different things like that, whereas that mode has kind of been completely neglected over the last like decade or so, and more people have been pushed into playing FIFA Ultimate Team because that's where all the microtransactions are. Mm-hmm. By having these open combat missions in the single player stuff, where you have those battle royale style pickups, you have the drop-in stuff, it's all solo kind of oriented. That to me is just like, okay, someone at Division has gone, can we condition players to basically go into Warzone and do more Warzone-y stuff? It's just, General Shepard levels of buffoonery.
It's like, it is weird because, like you said at the very beginning, like, it is, you think people know what we're getting into, and I feel like if you were following the gaming industry across the last year or so, you know exactly what this was. I remember Josh did a whole video, me and him did a whole video on the state of what it seemed, how it seemed to be coming together, and how it was quite a worrying release across the last few months, and obviously that's only been proven true now that it's finally out. But it is one of those things where, like you said, it's the end of an era, it's the end of the current Call of Duty. I forget which producer was being asked about that over on the Activision side, but they said it's the end of a certain era, a certain identity for Call of Duty, and then it's going to get handed over to Xbox. So I don't, it is one of those things where it's so big that it can't really take any dents at this point anyway. But I am fascinated by, or I will be fascinated by, the sales. Like, is the average person going to realize, is there going to be that mainstream conversation between the average person just saying to each other, like, hey, this isn't worth full price, or I regret buying it, or whatever, and will that take hold, and then will that affect Microsoft's
Scott, we
way
say
forward?
This every single year. I have conversations with mates who are like, I'm not going to get the new Call of Duty, and then they end up getting it anyway, and I'm like, again, if you want to play it, I'm no judgment free zone, right? But if you're going to come out and say like, I'm not getting it, I'm not getting the new Call of Duty, I'm not getting the new FIFA or whatever, and then you go and get it anyway, because that's the thing you do. It is the routine. It is the tradition now.
True.
You have your one big game a year or whatever.
God, launch weekend's fun, man. I mean, the thing is, right, I'd say what's really interesting is that history has kind of repeated, because I don't know about you, but I dropped off the original Modern Warfare 3. That was the one that I just didn't get. I felt like it was too many in a row. I love Black Ops, back in the original Black Ops, and then I didn't get Modern Warfare 3. That was where I started to falter a bit, and I didn't come back, I think, until about World War 2 or something. And so
I'm a bad one to come back to.
Infinite. I forget which order they rolled out in, but it was, I missed a couple anyway, but it was definitely Modern Warfare 3 at the time that I was like, I'm kind of checking out. And I feel like a few people did then as well. And I wonder whether that happens again, like whether people are like, this is too much of the same thing year in, year out. And obviously, like you said, everyone always says that, but at the same time, this is the first time it's had a four out of 10 from IGN, a 5 out of 10 from GameSpot. Like, it is quite telling that it is the most threadbare, barely cooked version you could get.
The closest low point we have to the new Modern Warfare 3 in terms of the Call of Duty franchise, I feel, would have been Infinite Warfare, which I feel that received decent to good reviews.
That game was still great, man. I loved it.
You know, it just came out at a point in time where everyone was kind of fed up with near future stuff. You know, one of the most disliked, if not the most disliked, video game trailer in like YouTube history, whatever. This feels like it's, I don't know, like, I feel like Call of Duty always bounces back, and I feel like the franchise, the player base there is so plugged into the idea of nostalgia. If you consume Call of Duty content on YouTube or whatever, a lot of this is like, oh, we're gonna get to go back to Verdansk, and they've got Ghost back, and we're gonna get Makarov back, and we're gonna do this. It just feels very, like, self-iterative, and yeah, I don't know. I feel like even if you have a lull in Call of Duty stuff, it's never going to be enough to break that cycle. It is such a bedded in gaming franchise. It is a staple. It's not had any kind of, you know, time away from the spotlight. People are going to still play it. It's too big to fail.
Right.
I genuinely do think it's too big to fail. And especially, you know, it's kind of confirmed the fact that, you know, PlayStation were begging to have that 10-year deal from, you know, from Xbox to keep Call of Duty on PlayStation. Even if it is constantly diminishing returns, people will still turn up to play Call of Duty. That's just the way it's been. It's the way it's always going to be. And I don't even see, like, you know, even though there's a new generation of gamers who have grown up with like stuff like Fortnite, Call of Duty is still an ever-present thing. So sure. I don't see this as being like a generational kind of like shift or anything. It's still going to do well. People are still going to be like, oh, we're going to get a new Black Ops. They're going to bring back Mason. They're going to bring back this guy. And it's like, this franchise, man, it's quit living in the past, man.
I'm fascinated by what happens next, because like there was like in the previous timeline, it was Modern Warfare 3 was a bit shaky, and then I'm blanking on the order of the next one. Was it Black Ops was straight after that?
So no. So you had Black Ops in 2010, Modern Warfare 3 in 2011. 2012 was Black Ops 2, which was a banger.
Yes.
2013, I think, was Ghosts.
Yeah, Ghosts is where it started to falter. That was where it was like commonly agreed that it was one too many that
but
year.
Even then, The sales of those games are still massive. I feel like we're at a point now where everyone will just turn up for Call of Duty because it is the big event franchise thing that they're comfortable with and they're familiar with, and that's just how it's going to be. Like, I would love to be proven wrong. I would love to see a case with Call of Duty where they have a step back and think, you know, like with Battlefield, let's maybe take a few years off and assess where we went wrong. But again, like, you've got like 20, like they're charging $25 for like character skins and special bullets because they know they can. The reason people get outraged over those things is because people are buying them. I don't know. I feel like they're going to be rewarded for their nonsense for years to come.
That's a really good way to put it. Rewarded for their nonsense. But yeah, it's one of those things where, like I said, I'm fascinated where we go from here, because I feel like Modern Warfare 3 was a shake in the previous timeline, and they sort of tried to course correct, ended up in the future stuff, and then Advanced Warfare was solid enough. I really liked Infinite Warfare, but you can argue it wasn't Call of Duty, whatever. And then Black Ops 3 was really bad, and etc. And so we're in this
Black
weird...
Ops 3's multiplayer was really good.
The single
player was a bit meh, but the multiplayer, that was a fun time. People will come back and go, we were harsh on Black Ops 3.
Give it enough time. Next up, anyway, we'll see how that stuff shakes out. I want to talk about Daniel Reitman, Daniel RPK, who's a known movie Hollywood leaker man, who I think we know the name of, who's leaked quite a lot of stuff over the years. He's talking about Bloodborne movie that's apparently been leaked, written by Darren Lemke, who did Gemini Man and Jack the Giant Slayer, and is also associated with other projects like Shazam. Just writing a standard sort of Bloodborne story. Apparently the main story will be about a character, a hunter, travelling through Yharnam, which is the general sort of gothic Victorian setting of the game, trying to find out why the various Yharnamite residents are turning into beasts and going from there. But thoughts on this whole thing? Thoughts on, I guess, RPK's his track record, and then thoughts on the idea of a Bloodborne movie when we still don't have a 60 FPS patch on the PS5. What are we
shocking.
Doing?
Shocking. Get what the priorities doing? Right. I mean, yeah. I know the Daniel RPK has kind of got like a hit or miss track record in general. It's been a long time since I've actually like been keeping up with his leaks. I think last time I was really invested was when like the MCU was a big deal, which was a long time ago.
Many moons ago.
Yeah, I mean, it depending on the veracity of the claims, I mean, I think the guy who's involved with this, Jack the Giant Slayer, I haven't seen. I heard bad things.
It's like they're quite middling credits, like Gemini Man wasn't great.
And Shazam, I didn't like massively care for. It was very okay. Mm-hmm. And not really the again, you know, like maybe this could be a thing for him to be like, I'm going to do a Bloodborne movie. It's going to be super cool and gothic. I love gothic stuff. Let's do it. I don't know. A Bloodborne movie makes sense. I think like it's one of the most unique video game aesthetics we have going at the minute. Obviously one of the most popular From Software entries. Interesting to see how you narrativize this more, because I feel like so much of the charm of the Soulsborne games is the fact that you are making your own discoveries and creating your own narratives and stories to share. I think maybe that gets a little bit formulaic if you try and distill that into a basic movie plot, like guy shows up and tries to vanquish things. And I wonder if, you know, you lose some of the mystery if you're going to do that. I feel like a Bloodborne style thing would lend itself better to like a short
movie, like animated thing
where like an animated thing with like kind of it's mostly silent and you're getting a little bit of history bit by bit and then a cool boss encounter or whatever. It kind of I get alarm bells when I hear that. I don't know, I feel like Souls games are so uniquely video gamey to me. It's the same reason why I'd react trepidatiously if someone was like, I'm going to adapt Watchmen to be a movie again, because that thing is so uniquely like comics based that it only makes sense as a comic properly. I feel like the Souls games, it's a kind of similar vibe to me. Maybe you can tell, you know, I know there's been like, you know, tabletop RPGs and, you know, novelizations and comic spin-offs and stuff. So maybe there is groundwork for this. I'm not familiar. But for me, the charm of those games comes from forging your own narrative.
Yeah, my thing is, I don't know how you do a main character in a Bloodborne game is it Tom Holland again? Like, how are we doing? Like, Chris Pratt walks us through with a big pointy hat on? Like, I don't know what you...
So that just happened.
So that just
Tom
took
Holland
my blood.
To Michael Caine there, but you know.
It'll work, it'll draw the audiences, but I think, yeah, it's one of those things where it's a weird mixed bag, because I like the ambition of the Sony Pictures movement, the whole thing that Sony's kind of got going on, the PlayStation Studios thing, where it's like there was a Jack and Daxter movie that's leaked, which is hilariously Tom Holland and Chris Pratt, or at least that's as far as the rumors go anyway. And but we do have the Gran Turismo movie, which didn't make any waves whatsoever, but they keep trying to supplement the games with some sort of visual thing. There's a God of War series coming up that's going to be on Amazon, as far as I know.
Ghost of Tsushima with Chad Stahelski.
That one actually sounds awesome, because Chad Stahelski's track record is way stronger. And it's obviously the Uncharted movie, which I didn't mind, but it's not like I had many expectations for it. I was like, it's fine. I thought that was quite charming. I quite like the ending set piece. I was at least it lives up to the spirit of the set pieces in the game. But that's the thing. There's a potential for them to feel arbitrary. And it's like, with Bloodborne so underserved and everyone's screaming about just give us a 60 FPS patch so this thing runs a lot better on newer hardware, it's weird to sort of do the wider media thing, which is interesting because Capcom's doing a lot of it. The Onimusha series just released on Friday. And there's like, you know, there's a new season in Castlevania, which is more of a Konami thing. But you've got various properties, like Dragon's Dogma has a show. There's a Dota TV show. More of animated stuff. Devil May Cry is getting a new one. And I like that wider push, but I think it has to have a purpose overall. Like the core still has to be the game, and I think the game fans need to be serviced as well, need to be satisfied as well. It's one of those weird things where it's like, cool, you did a Bloodborne movie, but the thing still runs at 30 FPS and it's a 2015 game and you've not updated it in almost a decade. So I'm curious about it. This would hint at more stuff relating to Bloodborne, but I guess we'll see. Other than you know, in the past, the only other sort of other media that we've got for From Software stuff, as far as I can remember, is the Dark Souls comics. You know, there's a lot of fan projects, but there's nothing official in regards to, like, animations or movies just yet. So we'll see. Next item down is Rockstar are making a new game. This is listed over on their careers page, and they just opened an LA studio, and they have three main positions now open, an entry-level writing position around NPC dialogue and some casting positions as well, a casting assistant and a casting associate. And this is all written up by website Rockstar Universe, saying that it's highly unlikely that these positions are related to GTA 6 because that's so far into production at this point. So their assumption is a new game. Thoughts on, I guess, all of it? Do you think this is what do you think this can be?
Rockstar's Table Tennis 2, here we come, baby.
Baby.
I mean, I really, really hope that it's not GTA, and also kind of, I kind of hope that it's not Red Dead either. Like, as much as I love Red Dead Redemption 2, and I would love to see more of that world, I'm absolutely dying for Rockstar to try something new, or revisit one of their stories that they never really fulfilled to its fullest potential. Like, I would love to see an LA Noire sequel. I think I might have made a video about this in the past before, or written something, but the idea of, like, you make you have an anthology series of noir games based in the LA Noire style, and each game is a different decade. So, like, the 1950s, you'd maybe play as, like, a PI, a private investigator, and you have a different aesthetic compared to the late 40s, different political climate, different historical context. Then in the 60s, you get a whole new aesthetic. You kind of model it on, like, John Borman's Point Blank, make it like he plays, like, a Lee Marvin-esque figure. The 70s, you could go all, like, swanky and Gene Hackman-y and kind of, like, almost maybe nice guys-y if you wanted to.
Cool.
80s, you go into, like, the Michael Mann era where everything's neon and tangerine dream. That is something I would love to see Rockstar explore, because I feel like for the past decade, you know, we've seen plenty of innovation with Red Dead, with GTA. Those are great games, you know, benchmark, landmark titles for the studio and the different generations of consoles. However, I would just like to see a little bit more width and breadth from them. Go in different directions, experiment more. We have that, you know, I saw a video the other day pointing out Max Payne 3, it's gunplay, and how we've not had anything from Rockstar that has used that fantastic system since. You know, they could do a really fun action game with that premise. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I hope it's an LA Noire sequel. I hope it's something that isn't GTA or Red Dead. Just give us something new that isn't going to take 20 years to arrive and isn't going to, you know, absolutely burn out the developers either.
That's my thing, is I want to see what new Rockstar make, because I mention it so much every single podcast that we've done where we talk about Rockstar, but they are a completely different studio now. Like, they're led by completely different people. Sam Houser's still there as, like, a veteran member of the team, but lead creative Dan Houser leaving Laszlo Jones and Leslie Benzies, like, they were instrumental, like, to getting the likes of Red Dead over the finish line and Red Dead 2 and everything. And so I'm so curious, and I'm almost fascinated by it, like, that idea of, like, what is Kojima Productions without Kojima, who was left behind when he splintered off to make Kojima Productions, who was left behind at that Konami studio, because there were writing partners for him over the years, and who helped make GTA feel like GTA, or make Rockstar games feel like Rockstar games. I forget the name of the creative director, but there were other staff that worked on Bully and The Warriors, two of my favorite Rockstar games, that the Housers had very little to do with, if anything. And so I'm so curious what they do when they're not, because obviously they're associated with those names and that kind of thing. But yeah, I want, like, an all new IP. I want to see what they put together. I want to see how much that old Rockstar feel is there, in terms of they used to pay so much reference to movies and TV shows and different iconography of the different decades, and whether they do that anymore, or whether they just set something now, or what kind of movie it is. Max Payne 3, just shout out to that game. That thing is stellar. That's a big showcase of Dan Houser's writing, but at the same time, like you say, on the gameplay side, phenomenal playing game, and a Rockstar game has not played that good since. So maybe there's something they can do with that. But yeah, like you said, it's also going to take years to get any update on this. GTA 6 is still who knows when, and then it'll be the build-up and marketing and everything else. So it's probably going to be it'll be the next generation of consoles at this point.
It's hard being a fan of Rockstar games and not being a huge GTA person. Like, I like all of the GTA games. I don't love them the way I love Red Dead, or the way I love Max Payne 3, or the way I love LA Noire. So it's very frustrating that it is the biggest earner, and people obviously,
that's a really good point, actually. I grew up on, like, I loved GTA to a point. 4 was the one that made me a bit shaky on it, and I didn't really like 5 that much, but I love the old school ones, and it was fun going back to them in the whatever the hell they call that weird definitive edition collection thing, once they patched it enough anyway. But still, that's that thing, it's like different eras of Rockstar over the years, and it's about time they sort of kickstarted a new feel.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
That's a really good point, though, that some of their best work is non-GTA, even though they tend to be associated with GTA overall. Next news item is Daredevil DLC seems to be on the cards for Spider-Man 2. People might have already seen that the Nelson & Murdoch sign that you can go find the Nelson & Murdoch building in New York inside Spider-Man 2. That sign had been removed when people were exploring the area in the first week or so after Spider-Man 2 launched. However, the sign's now been restored. Whether that was a texture pack or whatever is one thing, but creative director Brian Interhart did tweet saying, oh, well, they must have paid their rent. And then more recently, this is only the last few days, there was a listening party live stream for the Spider-Man 2 soundtrack, and Brian Interhart ends the stream by saying, where is Daredevil? It was following up on a conversation that was happening at the time, maybe something in the live chat, but the stream that's the clip that's being shared now, the bit that the stream ends on, is him saying, where is Daredevil? As if it's a perfect segue into. It's like, dude must know what he's doing, and it makes sense. I mean, you know way more about the comic lore and the universe and stuff that I do, but it seems like Daredevil makes sense to do a DLC with.
I mean, Daredevil's my favorite Marvel character of all time, top three comic book character ever. I think he's the most storied Marvel character in terms of, you look at the character in the comics history, he had the most legendary runs from, like, Frank Miller, Anne Nesenti, Brian Bendis, Ed Brubaker, Mark Waid, more recently Chip Zdarsky. Just a brilliant character who would enrich what Insomniac have here. The one thing that I am slightly kind of confused by in regards to this, so it wasn't present when I was playing the Spider-Man 2 for review. I went looking for it again because I'm a Daredevil obsessive, and it wasn't there, like you mentioned. And it was raised in an interview with IGN that they hadn't seen it there, and Brian Interhart said, oh, stay tuned.
Yes.
And I don't know whether this is him just being playful over the fact that they forgot to put it in, and that he's joking about, oh, we didn't put it in, right, now we've got to put it back in, and oh, I guess they must have paid their rent or whatever, and everyone's taking this a little bit too far. But this, together with the hand tease, or what is potentially the hand tease, the secret room that people have found, the big red flag outside, you can kind of see the symbol of the Vishanti as well from Doctor Strange there, so it's kind of curious as to whether or not this thing is a hand reference, which is a ninja organization in Marvel Comics, or whether it is something to do with Doctor Strange. It's completely unclear at this moment in time. I would like some clarification soon so my emotions can stop being played with. But yeah, I mean, if he is being very playful with it, Mr. Interhart,
yes.
So I do hope that he isn't working everyone up for nothing, because Daredevil is a beloved character. He and Spidey go way back. My first introduction to Daredevil was through the 90s Spider-Man cartoon, where they help out. But yeah, there were several teasers, and they mentioned as well that when Sandman is being, when you've collected all the different pieces of him, I think Miles mentions, is it the Sandman one where Miles is like, oh, Peter has some lawyer friends who could maybe help or something?
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, I feel like maybe there is going to be something. I would very much hope so, because again, Daredevil fanatic, and I've been dying for some more. One of my big criticisms on the game was that it didn't feel like Marvel-y enough. It felt just like we were in a New York cardboard sandbox at times. You needed to make more superhero-y stuff in there. And Daredevil is a very, very easy way of making the world feel more lived in and bigger.
I'm curious what Insomniac's overall agency is going forward, like their sort of role, because they're kind of becoming the Marvel studio. And it's like, we know they're doing Wolverine next, and it was like, there's a Wolverine costume you can get in Spidey 2. And it's just a weird thing. I'm just like, are they building towards doing a Daredevil game? And is there crossover between like some of the tech, some of the physics engine stuff that's already there, in terms of, obviously Daredevil can swing, but nowhere near as fast or propulsively as Spidey. But it's one of those things where, like, does a Daredevil game then make sense? You have all the New York assets already there.
That's what I was going to say. I feel like you have this New York sandbox. It's very easy to plug heroes into that. Mm. And I feel like, for me, a Daredevil game would make much more sense as like a Sifu-style experience, where you're basically put in enclosed areas and you're using Daredevil's martial arts to do things. I don't think he works quite as well as Spider-Man does as an open-world patrolling hero, because he's basically micromanaging the crap out of, you know, six blocks in New York and Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah.
So he goes beyond that as well, but Hell's Kitchen is his main focus. I think you benefit more from a story linear kind of game for that. But yeah, I think at the same time, if you have this open world sandbox and you can plug in different Marvel heroes, it would make, you know, like Lego Dimensions had. I'm not saying that you should have like Toys to Life stuff in like Marvel Spider-Man 2, but I think Insomniac, so there's got to be some conversation there about like, what if we just make Marvel, like Marvel's game or something, like Marvel Sandbox, whatever, come up with a better name than that. I'm not a name guy. And then you have it where you have the open world, you have the characters, and then you have different short narrative experiences where you play as the character, you get open world traversal, and their own DLC story to go in with it. That would maybe make a lot of sense. I could see them doing something like that.
Yeah, I would take that as long as the gameplay side of things gets shaken up. Like, it's one of my biggest criticisms of Spidey 2 is how much it still feels like DLC, or it still feels like a continuation of what went before in a fine enough way. But I think if you were going to switch over to Daredevil, I'd want him to have a different feel to that combat. Like you said, you mentioned Sifu. If they can have weightier, more riskier combat where you have to nail every hit kind of thing, or you have to do something that feels like you're mastering a close quarters amount of enemies or something, that would be cool. But yeah, I mean, assumedly Spidey 2 will get DLC. I think they yet to confirm anything, but Spider-Man 1 got 3 packs by the end, so why not?
I feel like, again, spoilers if you haven't played Marvel Spidey 2, this is like a kind of a big spoiler for one of the side quests, but basically at the end of the flame, it ends with a tease of Carnage, so I think that is definitely a DLC tease. I don't think that's a sequel tease. I think the sequel tease we get comes at the very end of the game with the post-credit stuff and what we get with Norman and Otto and stuff. So yeah, I feel like Carnage DLC is a thing. It's a great way to mix, because obviously Peter has all his anti-venom abilities as well, so you can plug those back into stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, curious to see how that pans out, because I mostly enjoyed the City That Never Sleeps DLC for the first Spidey game, even if I thought that new enemies they added were incredibly frustrating to deal with.
Yeah, they doubled down on, like, we're going to do this one move, and if you're not hitting this one button, you are done, and then just spam them over and over again. We can throw in another news item, which is Insomniac confirming that going forward, their main Spider-Man is going to be Miles Morales, and this is in an interview with Gizmodo. They said that it always felt very natural, the idea that they all thought that collectively it would happen. To them, it was a great deal of evolution for Miles. At the beginning of the game, we see him struggling to figure out what he wants to do with his life, but by the end, we have Miles carrying the burden of the saving the city, and also carrying Pete when Pete wasn't strong enough to carry himself at various points. I mention this because, as a talking point anyway, but like alongside that idea of, like, do they do a Carnage DLC, maybe a Daredevil DLC, that rounds off what the Spider-Man 2 chunk is, and then Spidey 3 assumedly would involve Silk or some of the characters that are mentioned towards the end of the main story, or hinted at anyway. And then Spider-Man 3 is its own separate thing that is like a Miles-fronted game. Like, I guess, what do you think of the way that's all panned out? Like, it's kind of crazy.
So I like this. As a big Miles Morales fan, I'm a huge fan of this, because the Ultimate Comics series is one of my favorite, like, Marvel comics of all time. The stuff when Bendis introduced Miles was fantastically well done. And I like the idea of having Silk as... I think Silk is maybe a bit of a left-field kind of thing that we didn't see come, you know, coming. But I like the idea of Insomniac maybe reinventing that character slightly and, you know... I think people may be getting carried away with the suggestion that Miles is going to be the Spider-Man.
Like the only playable,
Because the ending of Marvel Spider-Man 2, it's not Peter retiring. He says he's taking a bit of a break, and he's still got anti-venom. Carnage is still a thing. We know that Norman and Otto primarily want to kill Peter Parker. They want to kill the Spider-Man that has messed up or whatever. Miles is probably... my prediction for Spider-Man 3 is that you will play most of it as Miles, and Silk will come in, and then maybe a third act inclusion of Peter. Or maybe they even kill Peter off. I don't know. I feel like there's plenty of places you could go with this. I like the idea of Miles being the new hero going forward, as long as he gets rid of that really bad costume, which is just terrible Adidas.
You mean the Adidas tie-in?
Yeah, product placement. Because at the end of the day, we've had 60-odd years of Peter Parker stories. What and something I've done with the character here has been fantastic, but Miles definitely still needs to carve out his own mythos and mythology that's been going on over the last 10 years or so. So yeah, I mean, I'm excited for that. Give me more Miles-fronted stuff. I think, like, I don't know. Don't get carried away, because I feel like Peter is going to be a key part of the third Spider-Man game, because, again, all the emotional grounding with the villains are tied with Peter specifically. I have no problem with him being a supporting player if that's how they're going to play it. Again, just change the goddamn costume, because it is so bad.
No, I think for me, it's I love the boldness that comes with this new universe, like this new sort of timeline, this new version of the character. I love the way Spidey 1 ended, like the whole stuff with Aunt May and everything. And for me, Spidey 2, if anything, plays it quite safe in regards to this. It's a standard Venom story, at least that's how I felt it was. Obviously, you're swapping out who Venom is, but the beats of that story felt quite similar. So I like the idea of shaking things up, doing another Miles-fronted game. Like, I love the Miles game in itself. I've seen another thing that's being discussed just amongst fan forums and stuff is the idea of a Silk game as a go-between, because we had Spidey 1, then Miles Morales, then Spidey 2. Do you do Spider-Man Silk and then Spider-Man 3?
That won't
and then
happen.
Bring that all together.
Because we didn't even see Silk in this one. Mm. We didn't even see that she hasn't even been introduced with powers. When we had the Miles Morales spin-off, we had the whole Miles had his fully rounded out arc in the first Marvel Spider-Man game leading into that. I don't really see them doing that. Unless they want to go for a full origin story game, they're literally like this, but I don't feel like you have... Silk does not have the brand recognition that Miles did back in 2018 and 2019 or 2020. So I think you have to devote a whole bulk main core Spider-Man game to fleshing her out, and then if you want to maybe spin that out from there. I'm curious what were you saying about the Insomniac Marvel Studio thing as well? I think that's really interesting, because like surely they will have their own things that they want to do away from Marvel, but it definitely seems like they're going into there, and I don't know how many Spider-Man games are they going to do, because I think the ending teaser 2, it kind of makes it seem as if 3 is going to be, I think they call it the final chapter or something. I feel like there was some deliberate play on words there about the final chapter. So maybe that is that's their Spider-Man trilogy done, and they move on to other things. But yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting time to be alive.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of fascinated by the wider view of how Sony has their claws in Spider-Man. Like, you've got all the Spider-Verse movies, and there's a Spider-Verse thing in Spider-Man 2. So it's like, okay, we got Miles Morales. We're pushing him quite a lot. Let's have a Miles-focused game. Let's go forward with Miles. And then we have the Kraven movies coming out. So let's have Kraven as the main villain in Spider-Man 2. And it's like, you can kind of look at the branding, the wide plan of how they're moving forward with everything. I think that's kind of an interesting angle on it, of what this means to Sony, because they've managed to get Spider-Man as a PlayStation character. Like, he's thought of as a PlayStation character in the gaming space anyway. And that's like a Herculean branding task in itself. But I think that's something that they'll never let go, or not want to let go. And so I don't think we're at that breaking point yet where Insomniac want to break away. It's not like a Neversoft Tony Hawk situation, or a Tomb Raider situation where they're sick of making them every couple of years. But I wonder about that. I mean, when you look at Brian Intihar in the various interviews, at the minute he's bouncing off the walls, can't believe the opportunities he's getting. He loves comics and everything else, wants to do all these different games, and that's awesome. But yeah, I wonder how much more there is there for that passion before it's like, well, we need another one, and we need, put more stuff into this map. We're just doing another Spider-Man game.
It's interesting as well. I'm very curious. I know we spent a lot of time on this topic, but I'm very curious to see how the gaming space continues within Insomniac, with respect to Marvel, Insomniac's Marvel games, given all the MCU fatigue that's going on at the minute. Are people fed up with superheroes, or are they just fed up with the MCU and the glut and the way the stories are being arranged and the content-y nature of it all? If Insomniac can preserve, a proper story-driven, this game should exist kind of feeling, then maybe they're able to weather that storm and keep going. Obviously, Marvel Spider-Man 2, did amazingly financially well.
Oh, yeah.
I'm curious to see how well that continues going forward. Because I think even though we're all a bit... It's the same with Star Wars, isn't it? I feel like a lot of us are very tired of Star Wars and superheroes, but we still all turned out for Jedi Survivor, and we still all turned out for Marvel Spider-Man 2. So maybe there is, there is an organicness to these stories that is going to ensure that Insomniac can keep the train going. I would personally love it if we got another Hulk game, man. Give Insomniac a Hulk Ultimate. Like, people talk about, oh, we want a Venom spin-off. Nah, let them do a Hulk game.
Oh, the thing is, that Venom sequence in Spidey 2 gave me Hulk vibes. Mm-hmm. Like, the way that you're jumping to other platforms and decimating, dude. It's like, it's not
did,
that
did
far off a Hulk
game. Did you play Ultimate Spider-Man 2005?
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it was very much in keeping with that. I mean, Hulk and Venom kind of play quite similarly in a way, I guess. I don't know. I want them to keep going with all these different experiences. I feel like, for as much as the MCU has like pigeonholed Marvel in a certain kind of story that needs to be told, I'm worried that Spider-Verse is doing the same thing with respect to the multiverse and how that's going into stuff. I hope that talented developers like Insomniac can look at this kind of heterogeneous universe and source material and go, okay, let's try and do something different. And that's kind of why I'm also excited for the Amy Hennig Captain America Black Panther World War II game, because that again, you know, tying into Marvel as a the pulpiness of Marvel back in the 40s. Can we maybe go a bit more cosmic like the Guardians of the Galaxy game? Can we maybe go a little bit more street level like Wolverine or Daredevil? There's all
that's
sorts
really
to go
here. The Guardians game is surprisingly incredible as well. Like, that has straight up Mass Effect vibes when you're walking around your spaceship talking to people and like and all the different dialogue choices you get and everything. Like, I was really surprised by that Guardians game. And it's a weird thing because I'm massively fatigued by superhero stuff. Like, I haven't jumped on Invincible Season 2 yet because I just don't care about superhero stuff at the minute. But at the same time, Andor in the Star Wars space was so effing good that it made me care about that. And I was like, damn it, like, you've got me back in again. So it's like, if a story's good enough or the writing's good enough or whatever, the framing, etc., it can punch through. It's just that it needs to be like gold star essential
we're
stuff.
Desperate for new stories to be told and not for characters to just be placed in their safest, most IP form ever. You know, that's the reason why Spider-Man has sucked in the comics the past like 5-10 years, is because in the mainstream mythos he has been stagnated as like an early 20 something who has no commitment to his relationships or whatever. I feel like with what Insomniac are doing, it's like, well, no, we're gonna make him age, we're gonna make him grow, we're gonna make you connect to this character like Stan Lee, Steve Ditko, Jack Kirby did back in the 60s, and Jerry Conway and John Romita as well, how they endeared yourself to the character, because he literally went from being a high schooler through to, you know, getting married to Mary Jane. I think we need more of that, and it's nice that these mediums are providing a space for that to actually happen and push these characters forward.
Mm-hmm. There is also, I don't know the name of it, but there's a new Spider-Man arc being written where he's got like a beard and a family. And
yeah,
he's older,
they're rebooting the Ultimate Universe. Yeah, so again, that's cool. That's Jonathan Hickman who's doing that, who's a great writer. He did the X-Men reboot the other year, which was fantastic too. I think it's just a case of there are spaces for innovation in this genre. But they need to be more than fleeting moments. They need to actually be carried forward.
Yeah, there needs to be a level of commitment to it. Final story, which is a very, very quick thing, is just an update on Last of Us Factions, the multiplayer mode that was in theory on ice, or it has been reported as being on ice, following an internal review by Bungie across Sony Production, Sony Studios, that this assumed live service game from Naughty Dog was on ice because it wasn't hitting various targets when put under this review. Update from the game director himself, Vinit Agarwal, who tweeted, he finished Super Mario Wonder, so he was tweeting just saying, like, I've just done this thing, I've 100% of this game. And also, and then he said, and so this tweet can live on in peace. Yes, I'm still working on that game. And so because he's specifically associated with that, it's enough to say the game is at least cancelled or whatever the hell is happening with Last of Us Factions. I mean, I've made my thoughts very clear on live service stuff, and I'll be amazed if they can turn this around. And I think with the fact that Jim Ryan's stepping down and Connie Booth's left and etc., Sony's in such a strange space, and they've committed so much to live service projects that even the dude who greenlit them all is stepping away from them. I don't know. I love the original Last of Us Factions mode, but I just don't know what the hell this turns into when it's all said and done.
I think it's one of those. It's like we're acknowledging that live service games are not the thing. They're not the moment or whatever.
No.
But at the same time, you know, begging Microsoft and Activision to give us PlayStation, give us Call of Duty for the next 10 years. So PlayStation are in a very kind of difficult. I just had a little mini burp there as well. I hope that didn't
very
get
good.
Picked up. But I'm in full throw. So like. They're kind of in a difficult position here, aren't they? There's the acknowledgement that they need to have their own thing that can that doesn't need to be, you know, and they've got 10 years to come up with that thing now. You know, they've given themselves a bit of breathing space. Last of Us Factions could be that. I don't know, I feel like it's such an easy home run for them because the multiplayer mode for the first Last of Us was so much fun. I don't know, it's just one of those things where it's like there is an element of discord here that shouldn't be there. Like, we know that from in the past, PlayStation's first-party output has been very streamlined, very kind of like laser-focused. We're going to get this thing out. We're going to have these premium single-player experiences. I don't think it should be so hard to make a multiplayer experience here, like especially for something like The Last of Us, which now with the TV show, as well on top of everything, has turned into a behemoth. You know, that is like a cultural moment, like that hasn't been as fully capitalized on as it could be in a night. Yeah,
not
so.
In like, yeah, not in the most like monetizable way.
No,
like you've
no.
got the this season two will assume it to be at least at the end of next year or something, but we'll see how that stuff comes together. Yeah, it's weird. I mean, again, I've talked about it loads, but I'm just like, the franchising of us is not remotely what I'm there for. Like, I love The Last of Us as one story. I enjoyed my time with two, but I just didn't need it. It was one of those things where I finished it and I was like, okay, sure. And then you're doing the movie and you're you have the comic stuff, which was fine in the first additional, the addendums to the first story. But it is one of those things where it's like, what if we had Infinite Last of Us? What if it was a live service thing and you can plug into it every week and there's different... I just don't care.
I don't,
like, it's not why I'm there.
My only defense of this is that I don't think live service Last of Us would be so corrosive that it would take away from future single player Naughty Dog stuff. Like, again, like I'm not particularly massively endeared to The Last of Us as a story because I'm so burnt out on like zombie stuff, post-apocalyptic fiction. Back in 2013, it was everywhere. I just wasn't interested. But I do think that if you're going to make, like, I'm kind of a sucker for unique multiplayer game modes. It's why I really like, you know, the original Red Dead Redemption, their multiplayer mode where you had the whole standoff at the beginning and you grab bags of gold. Max Payne 3 had a really fun, unique, inventive multiplayer mode. Assassin's Creed, Last of Us, the original Factions game mode, that was all good. I feel like we need more of these multiplayer experiences to get in and amongst the repetitive FPS stuff that we've had over the past decade. If you want a live service experience that isn't a hero shooter or a hero kind of like tournament game or just a generic first-person shooter, you're kind of really found wanting at the minute. We're not really in a diverse space of multiplayer games currently, so I want this thing to happen. Kind of really badly, not just because PlayStation need their own actual proper, you know, exclusive live service title, but because I feel like we have been stuck in a moment in multiplayer games for the past 5-6 years now.
Since 2016.
And it needs to move on.
Mm-hmm. Now, the thing is, like, that, when you think about that, you think about the amount of every single game that had a multiplayer mode from, like, across the 2000s into the early 2010s had a different feel. Like, Gears of War felt so different to Call of Duty, felt so different to Assassin's Creed. Even when Batman Origins tried to do its multiplayer mode, you had the Batman mechanic.
That
Metal
was
Gear Solid
really
4, you could
fun.
Play a Snake. See, that's the thing. And they were trying things, and it's like those asymmetrical multiplayer games that have obviously taken off, like Dead by Daylight and the Friday the 13th game and things like that. They're tapping back into that idea of a multiplayer space can feel different than just here's a bunch of loot and here's a bunch of grinding and whatever. But we'll see. I mean, yeah, I think the PlayStation have had this big push for live service stuff across this and last year, assumedly spearheaded by Jim Ryan, who's now, like I said, stepping down. And so I wonder, it's kind of the Rockstar thing. It's like, who picks up those pieces? Who says, oh, we actually should go through with this? And how true is all the rumors surrounding Connie Booth and her departure after 34 years, where she was the person in charge of those various teams that specialized in single player stuff, being asked to make multiplayer components and all saying to her, this isn't why we're here. And that was apparently why she ultimately was let go, because she wasn't able to sort of steer the ship in that direction, nor should she have been forced to. But yeah, it's one of those things where I'm so curious what next year looks like for Sony. By the time we get to this time next year, what will have happened in regards to their first party output? Because they don't have hardly anything in announced in terms of actual first-party studio.
It'll be time for Ghost of Tsushima 2 soon, right? Hopefully.
You'd assume so. It's been 5 years, 6 years by next year. Oh, maybe it's not that many. No. I've got this year wrong before for Ghost of Tsushima.
It's 2020, mate.
It's 2020. I was thinking it was 2018.
Oh, you nearly gave me a heart attack, man.
But yeah, we'll see what happens with Tsushima, because then that has the movie to tie in as well, so they might want to wait a bit and link those things up. For now, though, this has been The Wind-Up. I've been Scott Tailford. That's been Ewan Patterson.
It's me winding up, mate.
Thank you very, very much for listening to us, and we'll catch you across the week. Goodbye.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. A lot can happen in the next 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.